You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire. 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa. Ko Jessica, toku ingoa. No mai haere mai ki te Wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rapare Thursday. My name is Jessica and I'm your host, filling in for Caden today, and I'll be with you for the next hour. E whai ahine coming up on the show. I speak to Deputy Labour Leader Carmel Cipollone about Waitangi and the government's scrapping cultural report funding, as well as Labour's prison population reduction targets. Beth, what have you got for us today?
I speak to Councillor for Waitakere, Shane Henderson, about the government's intentions to roll back te reo Māori usage in the public sector and whether this affects Auckland Council and its operations. I also speak to Senior Lecturer of Counselling, Human Services and Social Work at the University of Auckland, Ian Hislop, about the rise of far-right ideologies and Trumpian-style thinking in Aotearoa and what this means for the country's future. I also speak to Professor of History at the University of Auckland, Jennifer Frost, about the historical suppression of the youth vote in the United States in light of the upcoming US presidential election.
Thanks, Beth. Kester, what have you got for us today?
I speak to HIV prevention researcher at the University of Auckland School of Population Health, Peter Saxton, about blood donation for gay men in Aotearoa.
Thanks, Kester. He aho whakaaro, I would love to hear your thoughts on any of our pieces today, so get in touch. Tuku pātuhi mai, text in on 5395, or Waiamai Rane, give us a call in studio on 309-3879. Ka awa e wariwari e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ene kōrero anō he pākihiri roki roki maoranga i te pai tuku tuku o irirangi poho me haere ki 95BFM irakati.com, and catch all of our stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com under BCasts.
Now it's time for our weekly catch-up with the Labour Party's Carmel Cipollone.
For our weekly catch-up with the Labour Party, I spoke to Deputy Leader Carmel Cipollone about her experience at Waitangi, as well as the government's announcement yesterday that it will no longer fund cultural reports used in sentencing. Here is that interview now. First of all, I wanted to ask you about Waitangi Day and what your main takeaways were this year from the commemorations.
Yeah, sure. So I was up at Waitangi from the 2nd to the 5th. Clearly the political porphyry had happened for us on the 3rd and for the government on the 5th. The general masses that had converged on Waitangi were certainly unified. It was an amazing feeling to be in amongst it with the crowd who were there to actually make their voices heard to the government with regard to their absolute support for Te Reti o Waitangi, for tangata whenua, for te reo Māori, and all of those things. So really it was unity against everything the government has been pushing since they've got in, really. I didn't go up to the Marae for the government speeches, but I certainly watched the live stream. Very disappointing, actually, very cringeworthy in so many ways. The fact that so much of what the Prime Minister was saying was a repeat from last year, so a copy and paste of his speech. The way in which the other politicians from the government spoke to the people that were there in attendance, who had made, you know, the effort to be there to have their voices heard, in many ways it was very patronising and very condescending, and didn't go down well with all of those that were there. I have to say, we were received well on the ground, whether it be from our interaction with the EU leaders or whether it just be those people that we spoke to at the stalls. And so we did do a lot of just getting out and about and just talking to people while we were there. So it was a very interesting Waitangi.
We saw this year the largest protest Hikoi to Waitangi grounds in modern history take place. What do you think this might suggest about public appetite for the policies that the new government is introducing or removing, particularly that will affect Māori?
Oh, it really is indicative of that strength of feeling against what the government is doing. They're needing to also make mention of the fact that it was Māori, it was Pākehā, there were other ethnic groups there in support of Māori, and so a broad range of New Zealanders who wanted to turn out and turn up to let the government know that their direction for this country is not the right direction and they're taking us down the wrong track. And so, yes, there was a massive turnout on the 6th in terms of that protest hikoi that turned up, but there were already so many people there. I have to add that I returned to Auckland on the night of the 5th so that I could attend the big Waitangi event in West Auckland. And again, the numbers were massive. I think that was the biggest turnout they've had for the YTT Waitangi at YTT event. Over 20,000 people and solidarity in the audience. Again, a range of New Zealanders that were in attendance to not only enjoy the concert that was put on, the food that was there, but each other's company and to also commemorate in a very positive way this very special day and te tiriti o Waitangi.
How do you feel that Labour in its recent tenure better served Māori and upheld te tiriti?
Well, we worked with Māori and we had a fundamental belief in the principles of the tiriti and the relationship between the Crown and Māori. Some of that was very obvious in terms of some of the big items that came about because of our government's tenure, things like the Māori Health Authority, things that unfortunately look like they or are being disestablished by this current government. Things like the Māori Health Authority were going to create the platform for change that had been missing for so many years, the platform that we needed to address the inequities that exist for Māori in the health system. There's no denying that Māori have worse health outcomes than so many other New Zealanders. And so that platform was really important. It is disappointing to see that the government is no longer moving ahead with it. However, there were other things that we did that perhaps weren't as visible. We had a social accord with Te Hiku Iwi up north that had been signed by the previous government, but nothing had been done with it. We took action. We strengthened that relationship with the Iwi. We went up there and I could see physically the changes that they had instigated and the support that we were giving and how important the support was that we were giving to their initiative.
I also want to discuss the government's announcement yesterday that they'll be scrapping Labour's prison reduction targets and no longer funding cultural reports. Can you tell me about what considerations were behind Labour introducing these policies as well as Labour's approach as a whole to the justice system?
So the prison targets had to be set when we first took office because our prisons were busting at the seams. There were mass renovations that needed to be done to the existing prisons to get them up to scratch. But if we'd continued down the trajectory that the previous national government had left us, we'd be in the position where we would have had to build these mega prisons. And quite frankly, we know that that is not the best spend of taxpayer money, but also that the trajectory for New Zealanders, if we resign ourselves to the fact that we were going to have that massive increase in prison population, is not going to be good. And actually the protection and safeguarding for New Zealand moving forward would be potentially jeopardised in terms of future criminal activity. So that was why we set the target. However, funnily enough, last year the Prime Minister did say that the target was no longer in place. Well, we'd avoided that situation that we were worried about in terms of needing to build mega prisons, and we were no longer at the point where our prisons were busting at the seams. But it seems like the National Act New Zealand First government want to take us back there. You know, they want to incarcerate more people, and that will inevitably lead to bigger prisons, bigger prison populations, so larger fiscal implications, and down the track, as I said, implications for society, because of what we know happens when you do lock people up, particularly for extensive periods of time. And the cultural reports, well, they've been in place since 2002, which meant that they were actually in place under the previous government as well. They are important, well, the previous national government as well as us. They are important because they can actually help with supporting, you know, strategies that will assist with reducing reoffending rates, you know, rethinking whether or not prison and incarceration is actually the right pathway for individuals or whether or not there is another option. So, again, very disappointing, very short-sighted, and I feel pretty disappointed with the government because it's almost they aren't telling the whole story to New Zealanders, and instead are, you know, painting a picture that they're going to be harsher on people committing crime. But in the end, who loses here? And unfortunately, it will be New Zealand in the short, mid, and long term.
What will it mean that these cultural reports are not funded? Because the government has said that they're still able to be utilised, but that they just won't be funding them. So what impact will this have?
Well, as I've already seen reported, those that will be able to afford to pay the private costs to get a cultural report done will be able to do so. And those who cannot afford that cost will go without having a cultural report. It's been made very clear from the commentators speaking to this that the people who are more likely to lose are obviously those who are poor, but more likely to be those who are Māori and Pacific as well. And so here we go again with another measure that has the unintended or unintended consequence perhaps of creating further discrimination in the justice system for those that are poor and those that are brown.
How effective do you believe Labor was in reducing the number of crime victims, as National has highlighted this as a priority? Obviously, they're mostly focused on, it appears, ram raids and store break-ins. But how do you believe Labor was effectively able to reduce the number of victims of crime?
Well, we were already seeing a reduction in ram raids and that youth-related crime that had been occurring during and as a result of COVID, really. And so that came down to the investments that we made around full wraparound support for those young people and their whānau, as well as the safety measures that we'd invested in for the small business owners, particularly those dairy owners that were getting attacked. So we had already seen those ram raids come down. You know, I want us to keep in mind that one of the biggest crimes committed in this country is actually family violence. And so the investment that our government put into family and sexual violence was significant. And it was definitely more significant than what we'd seen previously. And the programs that came about because of the investment are ones that we hope to see continued support by the government in. We have an issue in New Zealand with family and sexual violence, and we need government after government to continue to invest in those programs and to prioritise that particular area so that we can see a change in the behaviours that occur across Aotearoa. So, you know, I think that we did really good work and made the right decisions in investing and finally a strategy for family and sexual violence and finally putting money into those programs, and I'd like to see that continue.
That was Labor's Carmel Cipollone discussing Waitangi as well as cultural reports.
That was the Labor Party's Carmel Cipollone.
Well, first of all, oh, I love it. Clearly you've given up on trying to have any sort of neutrality in this interview.
The Wire.
In recent years, Aotearoa has seen a rise of far-right-wing ideologies. Today I speak to Senior Lecturer of Counselling, Human Services and Social Work at the University of Auckland, Ian Hislop, about this phenomenon and what it means for the future of Aotearoa and its people. Here is that interview.
Are there different factors that can be attributed to this phenomenon, or are we just seeing a natural pendulum swing?
I think there's a bit of both going on, probably, Beth. We do swing from left to right historically, but I think that the depth of populist right-wing ideology has increased significantly over the last several years, and it's not just in Aotearoa. It's consistent with a shift around the world, in Europe and South America, and of course in the US with the kind of Trump regime, and now we have a clearly fairly hard right coalition government elect, and it's a mixture of things. The ideology of it is interesting because it's old fashioned economic sort of fundamentalism, pro-business policies, but there's also elements of social conservatism and nostalgic shifts back to calls back to things past, and elements of racist policy.
Mm.
Yeah, all of that stuff. So, if you look at those coalition agreements, ditching fair pay agreements, extending 90-day trials for new workers, reducing tenancy termination requirements for landlords, generally looking after the bosses. But then you've also got all that pushing back on progressive policy in relation to Te Reo Māori, governance arrangements, references to the treaty principles and legislation, scrapping the Māori Health Authority, all of that, policy and the Kotahitanga pushback that we saw up in Waitangi and have seen toward the Kingitanga and Ratana. That's very interesting times, and it's all to do with this genesis of right-wing thinking and policy and how that's come about.
It seems to be sort of a regression dressed up as a commitment to tradition or a nostalgia for tradition, as you sort of mentioned. Are these reactionary politics, and what are they in response to, or do you think they stem from fear?
I think a lot of it stems from fear and insecurity because of the times we live in, the spectre of climate crisis, uncertainty around the world, lots of war, war in Europe, the subjugation of Palestinian people by Israel and funded by the states. And I mean, the Trump phenomenon is interesting because they've cashed in on, I guess, suspicion of the liberal state itself, where the progressive state is seen as the enemy for the people. And all that kind of fear and insecurity, I think, uncertainty, makes people susceptible to a politics of blame and division and self-interest. And the idea that the post-war welfare state and visions of growth and prosperity, all that's been sort of shaken. So that, the nostalgia you talked about, going back to an imagined time of national unity, racial harmony, that all that morally conservative, anti-woke sort of rhetoric, New Zealand First manifesto, that all plays into that that fear and insecurity, harking back to a time when things were simple and clear and people were looked after and better. Well, at least that's the illusion.
Mm. Would you say the rise of the right in Aotearoa has led to increased polarisation throughout the country? And if so, what are the implications of this for our society and for social cohesion?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think we have become more polarised, and we're seeing that. In some ways, I think it's useful to have some of these debates and get some of these things out in the open. And we have got a significant pushback against this right-wing ideology. And, equality and freedom are very appealing to people, and people end up voting against their own interests because, in the sort of ACT Party argument, people are seen as these discrete, selfish, self-interested creatures making free choices, you know, based on their own interests, and that seen as normal and natural, and we're all responsible for the free choices that we make and all that kind of thing. And, of course, you know, that kind of thinking is threatened by communal social arrangements, by, you know, the kind of values and beliefs you get in Māori social structures.
Mm.
Accounts for some of that sort of negativity directed towards the idea that in supporting Māori social structures and aspirations, we're somehow undermining, you know, the natural politics of Pākehā New Zealanders, which I think is a vicious lie, but it's a powerful and emotive lie. And, you know, that does create fear and division, but I think once things are explained and unpicked and understood a bit better, there's a chance of a more progressive way forward.
Does the rise of the right in Aotearoa pose a threat to the structure of our political systems or even human rights when we look at the implications for co-governance arrangements, for instance?
Well, I think it can do. And, I mean, certainly if you look at the US example, you know, the liberal state is seen as the enemy. Because equality is defined as the right to compete and any effort to level the playing field, you know, to reduce disparities of wealth and power, that's seen as unfair and as a break on freedom. So it works very well as an ideology for the rich and powerful, but not so well for the socially disadvantaged. And as I said, the unfortunate thing is that people who don't benefit from those policy ideas end up, you know, endorsing it at the ballot box. So, yeah, I mean, right-wing governments eventually, you know, lean into being authoritarian and totalitarian and reduce the opportunity for democracy and freedom. And you know, it shows, I guess, some of the limits of social democracy, and that's the scary thing. A bit like the US and their defence of human rights globally, but their preparedness to trample on the human rights of the Palestinians. It kind of exposes some of the contradictions that sit behind liberal ideology internationally. And yes, I think potentially there is a threat to our democratic freedoms, and that's one of the things that we need to educate ourselves about and be vociferous in defending.
How can we do that?
Well, I think we need to have the dialogue. We need to speak up. We need to call out oppressive policies when we can. And, you know, if that means protest and, you know, people standing up for themselves collectively, then, you know, it may look, you know, divisive and noisy and not the kind of New Zealand we'd perhaps like, but I think if you don't have the debates, if you don't call out the ideology behind the populist right, then you end up slipping into a very unfree society. So it's important that we push back, and we're seeing some of that. You know, we're seeing it at Waitangi, we're seeing it in movements around calls for the government to develop a better attitude to the genocide in Palestine, a more supportive attitude to the Palestinian people that looks like a resolution that is fair and reasonable. And I guess, you know, this underlying idea that self-interested accumulation and compounding of wealth in the hands of individuals is, you know, the natural and normal appropriate way of living. We need to find ways that are less exploited because the planet can't take being hammered to death by a self-interested business-focused capitalist mode of development. And we need to move on from that. So we need to have those conversations. As the old anarchist thinker Noam Chomsky said, you know, people are fed on necessary illusions and emotionally potent oversimplifications. We need to think below those oversimplifications, think for ourselves, and understand that we share the planet together and need to look after each other. And it's not all about self-interest. Freedom and equality aren't what the ACT Party tell us they are.
Yes, and there's this sort of blurring of lines between the definitions of equality and equity, I think, which is
absolutely
extremely dangerous.
That's right. And, you know, wealth and power don't naturally accrue to those who deserve it the most and work the hardest. That's probably the biggest myth of all.
Mm.
Wealth and power accrue to those who have wealth and power in the first place, and this in the kind of system that the right to proclaim is normal and natural. And we need to see below that illusion.
It's the neoliberal ideal, isn't it? Coming
yes, well,
coming back
well,
with a vengeance.
Well, that's right. It's the It's the American dream.
It's the American dream.
dare I say it, you know. But, you know, I think that people are ever getting to, I think, see beyond some of that. And, you know, I think people live in the shelter of one another. I think human solidarity, compassion and empathy are normal and natural. And those are the kinds of values that we need to embrace if we're going to move forward and, you know, live the kind of life that we could as human beings. And people call me an old-fashioned idealist, but I don't make any apologies for that. I think we can live in better ways. I think we can find ways of, you know, fostering compassion and understanding rather than competition and self-interest. And I don't think the consumption and accumulation of assets is the meaning of life. I think it's what keeps the wheels of a capitalist economy moving, but it doesn't actually lead to happiness or fulfillment, and that's, you know, a lie essentially.
That was Senior Lecturer of Counselling, Human Services and Social Work at the University of Auckland, Ian Hislop, speaking to me about the rise of far right wing ideologies in Aotearoa.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
We'll be right back. Keep it on the B.
Blanco White is soaring to New Zealand for the first time ever to deliver a cosmic performance at the Tuning Fork, February 16th. Once I saw the killer of clothes. In the fresh light of his new album Tarifa, a record that embraces colourful fusions of folk, Indian electronics, Blanco White gets set to enthrall in New Zealand. Blanco White at the Tuning Fork, Friday, February 16. Tickets from Moshtix.
The BFM office.
What's that on the couch there?
What?
That spot.
Is that beer?
No.
I told you before, don't let Lewis drink beer on the couch. He leaves those beer spots everywhere.
Hang on a second, what did you just say?
He leaves beer spots everywhere.
I told you, beer spot, Johnny.
That gives me an idea. Quick, to the production studio.
Are we rolling?
Yep.
Here's an idea, why not head on over to the Beer Spot? They have Auckland's best range of boutique beers, plus you can leave as many spots as you like, cause the floor's bloody concrete. The Beer Spot, for all your beer needs. With 40 delicious beersies on tap and 6 locations Auckland-wide, the Beer Spot is your tappy place. For opening hours and to find out more, head to thebeerspot.co.nz.
It's returning! 95 BFM blessings are looming. Get ready to be bestowed with big beats, big sweats and big times. It's back! The B-Rave 2.0. B-Rave.
B-Rave 2.0.
Featuring Babyface Killer, AJ Honeysuckle, Versetti, Galiliafi, and one, Mr. Meaty Boy.
B-Rave 2.0. 95 BFM and Under the Radar present the B-Rave 2.0. Saturday, March 2nd at the Mothership. Tickets available now at undertheradar.co.nz. Thanks to Scrumpy, fresh for the bite.
Seabiscuit's a wanker. Black Beauty's been checked out since 96. Farlap's dead and Australian.
But there are still some equine chums who know how to show you a bloody good time. Pony Ping Pong on 95BFM. Every Friday night, Matt and Aaron are here to blast open your weekend with a mix of mashdowns, candid convos, cheap shots, and mystery celebrity nakedness. Pony Ping Pong. Friday, 9 to 11pm, only on 95BFM.
Now, tell me about your father.
City Counselling on 95BFM. Our weekly chat with the good people of Auckland Council.
Welcome back to The Wire. The government has made its stance clear on the future of usage of te reo Māori in the public sector. I speak to Councillor for Waitakere, Shane Henderson, about this decision and whether it affects Auckland Council and its operations. Here is that interview. Does the government's decision to roll back te reo Māori in the public sector affect the way the council operates?
Yeah, it's not something that the council has even discussed, and I would say that it shouldn't affect us in any way. Auckland Council governs really according to its own roha, and we should actually start to assert a bit more of our sort of mana and stand on our own 2 feet in this kind of stuff. We've got a really proud recent history of actions in this area, such as dual naming of parks, which is a really successful program. And this is the kind of stuff I'm expecting us to continue rather than roll back. So we'll be keeping on going as far as I'm concerned.
So the council intends to proceed and work with Te Reo Māori practices to better itself and to work with its communities and to honour Te Tiriti.
Yeah, Auckland Council, as governors of the city, I think have a duty to first and foremost honour Te Tiriti o Waitangi and to govern in the way that that has always envisaged as the founding document of the country and the city. So, you know, as far as speaking personally, I think we should be reaffirming that and just continuing on with the plans that we've already been doing over the past several years.
Do you know if much of the council is upset with this rollback, or is that something that hasn't really been discussed?
Yeah, to be honest, we haven't been able to really air our responses to a lot of the government's changes in a number of areas because we've been essentially on a recess period, as one does. So we're sort of rolling back in now into formal meetings in council. And as the months go on, we'll be called upon to respond to the government's new direction in a number of areas, not just in terms of, you know, the Te Reo Māori direction. I'd imagine there will be some frustration from some quarters, at least, in some of what's happening.
That was Councillor for Waitakere, Shane Henderson, speaking to me about the government's intentions to roll back Te Reo Māori usage in the public sector.
Have you tried mindfulness? Try mindfulness.
City Counselling on 95BFM.
Scientists have finally found the clitoris.
The Wire.
A community report published by SPOTS, the Sex and Prevention of Transmission Study, argues that legislation preventing gay men from donating blood in Aotearoa is outdated and should change. New Zealand law currently prevents men who have had sex with other men in the last 3 months from donating blood. I speak to HIV prevention researcher at the University of Auckland School of Population Health and one of the report's authors, Peter Saxton, about the current legislation and what change could mean.
What are the current rules around gay, bisexual, takatāpui and other men who have sex with men donating blood in Aotearoa right now?
Well, currently in New Zealand, men who've had sex with another man in the last 3 months can't donate blood, and that's because of the HIV epidemic. But of course, New Zealand needs blood donors. So the question our study wanted to answer is, how can we make blood donation more inclusive while at the same time as we keep it safe?
Is there much evidence to support this legislation?
Well, look, it is controversial. And the context, I guess, is we've had, you know, more effective HIV prevention options these days. We've got condoms, but also PrEP or pre-exposure prophylaxis.